another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And it's Halloween horror time.
Yes.
And then your phone rings right when we start the show.
Good job. Yeah, it's weird. It's I guess it's if I would have answered it, would it have been like Scream? Or someone would have been on the other line saying, "What's your favorite scary movie?" Be like, "The one with the guy in the white mask? Is that Michael Myers? Yeah, yeah. Ooh, he's scary." And the weird, creepy voice on the other line.
I heard they're rebooting that, apparently.
They're rebooting Scream?
It's been a rumor that they're going to try to reboot it.
I don't think it needs to be rebooted. I think they're fine.
Well, they're okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I like it as Wes Craven's, you know, Wes Craven's work, but...
But yeah, there's no need to, you know.
Yeah, I mean...
Or are you going to have, like, millennials and stuff, and they play drinking games, and the Scream guy murders them or something?
Listen to dubstep.
Yeah, it's like, what are you going to do different with it? You know, I don't know. But yeah, it's October, so we're doing our first ever theme month. We're doing Halloween horrors this month.
Yes.
We've got a series of horror films of various variety to talk about this month. And we're starting out with a special double feature today of a couple of classics, which we're going to talk about here in just a bit.
Your desk.
But so how's your week been?
So far so good, man. I mean, it's rained a little bit, but I think we're due for a cold front.
Yeah, but I still haven't freaking mowed while it's rain every day.
I haven't mowed either. My lawn's getting pretty high.
Damn it, rain. There's this guy he's a dad of Michael's football team, one of the kids, and he's from Canada, and he's like, "Is it normally this rainy in September?" I thought, actually, no, not really. It's usually April and May.
Yeah.
But we've had a very wet September, early October here.
A wet September.
But yeah, we have threat of hurricanes this time of the year, but generally it's not, you know, overly rainy. So, but welcome to Texas, dude.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
Yeah, where the weather changes every 10 minutes.
Basically.
Yeah.
And, my week's okay. I spent a couple of days sick. We were going to record a couple of days ago, but a stomach virus had me visiting the old porcelain throne a little bit. So it's like that wasn't happening.
Yeah, as you get older, your body loses the enzymes that it used to have whenever, you know, you ate Taco Bell. You could process it a little better. But now it makes it harder for you to digest whatever's in there.
Yeah, Taco Bell just straight in and straight out nowadays. as you get older. So, but other than that, So, our Astros are in the playoffs. They just won their first series. They moved on to in ALCS, so that's good. That's basically sums up the week for me.
Yeah, that's...
You know, good sports weekend. Longhorns won, Astros swept. Our Texans are still horrible, but somehow they found a way to beat the Cowboys.
They found a way to win. We're praising O'Brien, not because he's a good coach, but because he didn't cause
the finger
us...
finger from the wife in the background because she likes the Cowboys. But, you know.
I know.
But it is what it is.
I tell you, I work Texans tailgate, and we had three dumpster fires that normally don't get started. I don't know what was different about this game, but let's just say a certain fan base was in there, and we had three dumpster fires, some fights, someone pulled out a knife. I had to witness a Dallas fan try to attack an officer after he was drunk.
Nice.
And he was very upset.
There was a lot of that going on. The UFC felt the need to make themselves relevant again by starting a brawl.
Khabib.
Our pay-per-views numbers are down. Hey, why don't you go start a fight?
Yeah. And then he's like, "I don't know what I did wrong. The guy, he talked about my religion, so I beat him up."
Right.
Yeah. I'm like, I think he's going to lose his title because of that little stunt. So
interesting sports going on.
Yeah,
this
and the Rockets won. Let's note the Rockets did beat the Spurs. It's preseason, but hey, every Texans team won. Texas, Houston team won this weekend, and it's a good day. It's a good weekend for Houston sports.
The Astros won, and the Longhorns beat Oklahoma. That made my weekend right there.
I didn't even
care if the Texans won last night. Longhorns won, Astros swept. I'm good.
Did you see that picture that I shared on Long's post, our friend Long, that formerly of the Warp Cave, with the Texas fans saying, "Win or lose, at least we don't live in Oklahoma."
That's true. I've been to Oklahoma.
No offense to some of you Oklahomans. There.
Yeah. Well, I know people from Oklahoma who even admit that it's a dump.
Really?
And they're from there. It's just like they know. They're aware.
They should just come here.
Yeah, there's not much going on there.
Yeah. There's a reason they say, "I wasn't born in Texas, but I got here as fast as I could."
That's right. So, all right. Well, let's get into the show. And thank you to anyone who's listening on WBLZ Media at ironicradio.com, where you can find us every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central on the show. They replayed the same episode for like three straight weeks, but they had some programming issues, but they are back. They fixed it. They did play our new episode last week with the Big Lebowski. So it looks like they're back on track. So you should be hearing the new episode if everything went right this week on WBLZmedia.com. So that's us. And you can find all our episodes on, of course, TheRebelRadioPodcast.com. So let's start the show with Download This, is where we tell you what we've watched, streamed, checked out this week. It can be new. It can be old. It can be in the future. I don't know.
Yeah.
So what have you watched or downloaded this week?
A lot. Like, for some reason, on Monday, you know, I had a 3-day weekend leading into this week, and I decided I was going to watch a bunch of stuff. So, of course, I watched our double feature stuff. But then after that, I felt like, you know, I needed to watch some other horror movie stuff. So I watched Scream because I have the Stars package with my Prime, and I watched Scream. I watched Fist of the North Star.
The anime?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a classic.
Yeah, and then I had forgotten how bloody it was. I guess maybe when I watched it on TV, they made everything sparkly.
Yeah, the original Fist of North Star is quite violent.
Yeah, and so I'm just watching it, and you know, I'm watching it with Jake, and he's like, "Whoa, what happened?" And I'm like, "His fists are so strong; these people's heads are hemorrhaging, basically, and they're exploding." And he's nice, like, "Whoa!" And he's just watching it, and Jackie's like, "Don't let him watch that."
There was a few weeks ago, I was watching Street Fighter 2, the animated movie, a few weeks back, and it's on Prime. And I thought it said PG-13 cut.
Yeah.
It wasn't. The Chun-Li shower scene is in there.
Oh, my God.
Michael wasn't paying attention. But I'm watching this, and I'm like, they're showing her boobs.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that it was.
She's showing my boobies.
But Amazon Prime showed it as the PG-13 cut. Oh, it didn't say it was the R-rated cut.
That's hilarious.
Luckily, Michael didn't notice it, though. But yeah.
So you were like, whoa, wait, whoa. Who else is watching in this room?
Because really, the only difference is in that version, the actual PG-13 cut, it still has the blood in it. The only difference is that scene, really. That makes it rated R. It's the Chun-Li shower scene.
Is that the one right before she fights Vega?
Vega. And other than that, it's the same cut. Cut. It's just there's a different that one scene. Yeah,
Vega gets his ass beat.
Yeah, but go on.
Yeah, yeah. And then I know I Ant-Man and Wasp. I got my solo as well,
yeah,
so I did watch
Solo. Borrow your Voodoo so I can watch Ant-Man.
Yeah, yeah. I'll leave you with that info, and that way you can watch it. I freed up some of my old devices. I deleted them on there, so you should be able to add yours no problem. But yeah, I got that, and it's. I think it's a solid B minus. Yeah. You know, it's not great. It's not bad.
I just kind of in the middle. Watch it so that I'm in the know when Infinity War 2 comes out, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then I think that was it for Download This for me. Just about four flicks.
Yeah. I kind of in similar ways. I other than the movies for today's feature, I did watch Solo again, because it's funny, I bought it last week, and I kind of watched it in parts, but I hadn't really sat down and watched it from beginning to end without getting up off the couch,
yeah.
So I sat down and watched it, and then yesterday was just kind of a day of rest, because everybody had been a little sick and trying to get better, so we watched, I rewatched Inception, the Christopher Nolan film, which I still think is a really well-done movie. We watched Fanboys, which
Fanboys.
Is a good, fun, you know, movie where they're trying to see Star Wars, and we watched... we had put Nightmare Before Christmas on, which we might be doing later this month, but
yeah.
I'm gonna have to rewatch it because I didn't really pay attention to it yesterday. I just had it on.
This is
I felt like there was something else that we watched yesterday, but those are the two big ones, other than keeping up with our Astros this week. But, you know, Inception is one of those movies that I think that people kind of complained about the complexities of it when it came out, and the layered dreams and everything, and the open ending that Christopher Nolan left on it. But I also view it now, almost 10 years later, as it could be down the road looked at as one of his greatest films. I think people will study that movie and they'll look at it more, because I think it's really well done. A really good cast with Leonardo DiCaprio and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Tom Hardy. And it's a really well-shot film.
It is.
And Nolan makes some really great-looking films. I know people were divided on Dunkirk and stuff, but it was really well. It looked good. Nolan has some really great cinematographers and the people that shoot his films for him. And he's one of our best directors working. I mean, even the scope and scale of his Batman films are really epic, you know, and he does a great job of that. And Nolan's quite a remarkable director, I think.
You talking about Nolan, it's reminded me about, you know, how much fun, you know, I've had watching his movies. And it'd be cool if, you know, maybe Star Wars reached out to him.
As much as I want to see Nolan do more original stuff like Inception. I want to see him do his. I know he's been linked to Bond doing a Bond film. He's been linked to the Dirty Dozen remake, which I could see him doing something like that. But at the same time, I really want to see more original work from him because I think he's a really imaginative mind. And there's not a lot of directors like that anymore out there. A lot of these guys are just studio directors. They do what they're told or they won't, you know, and he's one of the few guys we have out there, I think, still from that vein of the Spielberg class and stuff that can really make imaginative films. And I'd like to see what he does next, you know. And I'm not sure what he's working on. I know he was taking a little break because he had done, like, the Batman films and Dunkirk and Inception. He had made, like, 6 straight movies in a row year after year. So I think he's taking a little break right now. But I'm sure he'll be back with something strong. So that's what I watched this week and download this. So.
Nice. But, solid week.
Yeah.
Solid week. Yeah.
So before we get into today's movies, we usually do news briefs later, but there's really big news this week. This is top Billy news, so we have to talk about it.
Yes,
first.
We do.
Jon Favreau, of course, of Iron Man directing fame and also happy in the Iron Man films. And he directs. You know, he's doing the Star Wars TV show that's going to be on the Disney streaming service, and he is producing it and putting it together. And he dropped a bombshell this week on his Instagram, announcing what the show was called and the directors and the first image of the film. And it's going to be called Star Wars The Mandalorian. And essentially, it takes place, they're saying, about 7 or 8 years after Return of the Jedi. And it's about a lone gunslinger, Mandalorian, basically going through the Star Wars universe, so it seems, and his adventures, I guess, so to speak. That's really all we know. He didn't say a whole lot. But I really like this idea.
Yeah,
a lot.
The opening of it kind of reminded me of, like, you know, if you were a bounty hunter walking through Mos Eisley playing Star Wars Galaxies.
Or a very Clint Eastwood, Man With No Name feel.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
But a space age one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a space western. And they dropped an image, which is apparently The Mandalorian. No casting news on this, so I'm guessing they're going to go with the CGI characters, a lot of unknowns. Maybe it is a known actor. We don't know who's behind the mask. That would be cool.
That would be cool.
It looks really neat. It looks like he's sitting on Tatooine or something in this image or standing there. And they announced that Dave Filoni is going to direct an episode. He's known, of course, for Star Wars Clone Wars and Rebels. Bryce Dallas Howard. Yeah, always her names. She's got like 4 names. Ron Howard's daughter is going to direct an episode. Takiti Waititi. Is that how you say his name?
Yes.
He directed Thor Ragnarok. He's going to do an episode. So a really great list of directors announcing this, and just seems like a really exciting project.
Yeah, I mean, and with who they brought on, I don't think that we're going to get, you know, a pile of poo. This is going to probably be pretty awesome.
And apparently production has begun, so that means they're full swing. They're filming this thing. A lot of talk that Disney streaming service is going to premiere next fall, about a year from now. So we might even get this before episode 9 comes out. We might get this new television series. And I like the timeline it's in, too. We've done a lot of prequel stuff. Let's go and do something those years after Return of the Jedi, something we haven't seen.
Yeah, let's develop these characters and do some, you know, some stories about the other side of the Star Wars universe that we're not used to seeing all the time and we've always been curious of and fans of, even though we never got it. You know, Boba Fett, one of the biggest characters, and we talked about all the time how little screen time he actually had. So that's going to be cool.
It opens up a lot of possibilities. This is only 7 or 8 years after Return of Jedi. There's possibilities of having appearances from characters that were background appearances in the Star Wars films, but we might find out what happened to them. Like, maybe we see Wedge. Maybe we see Mon Mothma. What happened to her? You know, there's characters that could appear in this thing that we haven't seen since Return of the Jedi that aren't in the sequel trilogy and things like that. So there's a lot of possibilities that could exist in this world. What happened to Watto after Episode 1? Is he still alive 35 years later?
Yeah.
You know, or after? Well, he appeared in Attack of the Clones, right?
Yeah, he did.
You know, my mind started racing with this whole idea of how this could all work, and it seems like a really cool idea. You know, you could have Poe appear in this, a young Poe Dameron, you know, before he joins the Resistance. It's really cool idea.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't kept up with Gotham, but, you know, I think that first season of Gotham, they had done pretty good, you know, getting us hyped up about, you know, some characters that, you know, we hadn't seen in a lot of the films.
You can't compare Star Wars to Gotham.
I know, but I'm just, you know, I'm hoping that I think it's going to be better than Gotham, obviously, because
Batman fan, I have so many problems with Gotham.
Yeah, I was really optimistic after that first season, but then it wasn't doing it for me after a while.
I mean, the Riddler's 15 years older than Bruce Wayne. It doesn't even make sense.
Doesn't make sense. I think they, you know, I think they just jumped the gun. They started, maybe they just casted Bruce Wayne a little too young.
And I don't have this in my news briefs, but I guess Batman's going to appear at the end of the fifth season, the final season, apparently, finally. So what, he's going to be a teenage Batman fighting 40-year-old Riddler? I don't know.
It's not going to make any sense.
It was a noble idea, that show, but it never worked. But Star Wars, I mean, they have the money of Disney behind them, Lucasfilm, Skywalker Sound, Industrial Light Magic. This TV show, it just has all the workings. It's going to be a mega hit. And it's going to sell the Disney streaming service itself to tons of people. Not that they weren't going to buy it anyway, because Disney is such a huge name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like I saw... It's a billion dollar name, like you said. And now we're talking Star Wars. I remember seeing this meme that someone posted, and it was one of our groups. I think it was Prep Time Debate Group. Did you see the one where someone posted a meme of Emperor Palpatine, and it says, "By the time Episode 1X comes out, the boycott will be fully operational."
Yeah, that's awesome.
and some guy, it's like, I'm like, does Mark have a troll account or something? This guy's like, Disney does not care about your boycott. It's still going to make $1 billion worldwide. As long as it keeps making money, they're going to keep producing it.
It's not me trolling. Don't worry.
Yeah. I was like, Mark?
Well, and then I guess the budget on this was, is this $20 million? Was that the budget?
I didn't see the budget.
No, it's more than that. Remember they announced the budget for the Star Wars show a while back. I think it was more than that. I think it was $200 million, up to $10 million an episode.
That makes sense.
One of the most expensive TV shows ever done. Because
gotta pay the director.
I guess they're saying 10 episodes the first season for the Star Wars show. And, you know, the Star Wars is this. It lends itself to an idea like this, a live-action TV show. And George himself had been trying to get it done for years.
Yeah.
Even before he sold to Disney, he had been talking about a live-action television show and never got off the ground. It makes you wonder if some of these are, if Favreau met with him, and maybe possibility that some of these are notes of Lucas's, the ideas he had.
I wouldn't put that against, I wouldn't, you know, discredit that possibility.
And being called the Mandalorian, we've got to see Fett, right? At some point, maybe not the first season, but you got to show how Fett... So you got to bring, I guess I know in official continuity, he's back in the Sarlacc pit because they got rid of the old continuity.
Yeah.
You got to bring him in, right?
Yeah, you have to bring in Fett.
Or what if he is Fett?
That's what I thought. Whenever I first saw him, I thought he was Fett. Because did you see the stock of that gun he has? I think it's his E-33 carbine.
He just has different armor on.
Yeah.
He's Boba Fett walking the land.
It should be. And then that's the break, the big bomb. It's really Boba Fett.
Can we just fast forward to next fall? I want to see this.
Yeah, show. I know, right?
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And we're recording on the same day that the new cartoon premieres. Star Wars Resistance premieres tonight.
Oh, okay.
And so people, by the time they hear this will be too late, but the deal of the day on Amazon Prime today is for $3 you get the whole first season.
That's not bad.
It's not bad at all. You know, they'll download new episodes every week as they come out for you. That's not a bad deal.
I'm gonna have to look at that. Because the I like the animation.
People are hearing this show. Yeah. It's too late, but hey.
Oops.
For $3, you know, it's not a bad deal.
Yeah, it's worth noting, even if it's late.
Yeah. So, Star Wars Mandalorian hit next year on a Disney streaming service near you. There's all these streaming. What are they going to call it? Probably just Disney streaming. I saw a rumor. Disney Play? That's been the rumor title.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, that's been apparently Disney copyrighted the words Disney Play, and that's been the rumor. That's what they're going to call it.
Makes sense.
So we'll see. So, and now, everyone's going to have streaming.
Streaming everything.
Everyone wants to cut the cord and save money on your cable bill, but you start coming out with all this stuff, you're not really saving any money.
Yeah, I just don't know. They've got a pat. These streaming services should just meet up and just... They just charge us one flat fee.
Yeah.
You know. And
then in order to have it, you have to have unlimited internet, so your internet bill goes up. So, yeah, it doesn't
matter.
So, all right. Well, let's get into Halloween Horrors 2018, our Halloween month. And we're started out with a double feature because why? Because back in the days, in the 1950s and 40s, and when these movies aired, they had double features in movie theaters all the time. That's what you would do on Saturday afternoon. You would get up, have breakfast with family, you'd go to the movie theater, you'd watch a double feature. Double features aren't common nowadays. I know there's classic theaters out there that still do that kind of stuff, but this was a real common thing back then. Even when I was growing up, you had a few dollar theaters and stuff that would still run double features.
Oh,
you go
cool.
pay a couple bucks, you get to watch a couple movies. I just remember my dad taking me as a kid to see the old Sinbad movies. It was a double feature of a couple of the Sinbad films from the 80s, old Ray Harryhausen. Sinbad. We went and watched a couple of back-to-back Sinbad films. So double
Not
feature.
The comedian.
No, no. The like I said, the classic stop-motion yeah. Ray Harryhausen pictures. And so nowadays, you know, it's not as common. Back then, it was a big deal. And these movies would often play together. And these, we're, of course, talking Universal monster films from Universal Pictures back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Mm-hmm. They had a huge collection of monsters that they had collected copyrights to. And a lot of this stuff was open domain because it had been around for a long time. These books were written in the 1800s and things.
Yeah.
And Universal bought them up and made movies of them. And we're talking today two classics. We're going to talk The Creatures from the Black The Creature from the Black Lagoon and The Wolfman.
Yes.
And a couple of really great, great films. And, you know, you got movies like Halloween's fixing to come out in theaters next week. And you have these movies nowadays that if people don't understand that if you don't have these movies that Universal made back then, you probably don't have the horror movies we have today. And they're owed so much to them. And we're going to start by talking about The Creature from the Black Lagoon. I don't know why. It just feels like the right movie to talk about first. I guess it's because I watched it first.
Oh, that's funny because I watched it second.
Yeah, well, see, I've seen The Wolfman a lot. It's where Wolfman might be my favorite Universal Pictures film. And so I hadn't watched The Creature in a while, so I wanted to watch it first. And your first time, is this your first time watching these?
Pretty much. I want to say that maybe my grandma or my grandpa had it on at one point, but I was like maybe 5 or 6. Because I remember seeing those creatures in black and white on the TV. I just can't remember when. So this is basically my first time seeing it.
Really sitting down and paying attention.
Yeah, and I was just amazed at how good the pictures still look.
Yeah.
It's not grainy or anything at all. The quality's really good. And they had the focus on the story, you know, there's not a whole lot of graphics,
right?
You know, so
stories, characters,
stories, characters, and dialogue,
and they keep the sets very simple. Most of their films were shot over 2 or 3 sets and sound stages because they had smaller budgets back then.
Yeah,
you're talking Creature was what, 1954?
I know the Creature overall made $1,300,000, but that's over.
Yeah.
I think that might have been the worldwide number. But yeah, 54, you know, at that time, $1 million was like saying $1 billion.
A ton of money for a film to make.
Yeah.
And the Creature of the Black Lagoon came out during the atomic age, mm-hmm. where people were really into like what could happen if nuclear war happened. They were into, there was a lot of atomic sci-fi in theaters and stuff, you know, back then.
Oh yeah.
And so people really went to the theaters to escape and to watch these kind of movies. Like, almost like a what if. What if this happened? What if this could exist? And The Creature in the Black Lagoon never really uses any kind of atomic commentary like a lot of movies from that day did. Mm-hmm. It simply was more based on ideas and legends that this creature existed in the Amazon, and these people believed in it.
They're like, what is this river empty into? Oh, they call it the Black Lagoon. Mm-hmm. They say it's a paradise, if you can live to tell about it. Yeah. And it's like, you know, okay, so you get this, you know, this is like folklore. This is, you know, superstition, old story about a, you know, maybe a cursed lagoon that they really don't get much mm-hmm. into the backstory. But you just assume that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, spooky and eerie history about this body of water.
Yeah. And you talk about how these movies really had to rely on story. And they do, and you said it right there, they do a good job of building the suspense throughout it by letting you know little things throughout it. And they don't waste time showing you the creature. You see his claw very early in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
But yet they still do this good job of building through dialogue in small moments, this amount of suspense that builds up to, like, what are really remarkable action scenes for the time.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, they're not Michael Bay and Fast and Furious movies where they're blowing everything up. But with the direction they had and the camera use, they do a really good job of making drama out mm-hmm. of what they had back then. There's a remarkable scene early in the film when you first see the creature and he's underwater and he's chasing the two guys and they're trying to put a net on him and capture him and find out that he's there, and it's really well done and really amazing underwater work for a movie this old.
Yeah, it looks really good. And you know, I always wondered why one person had you know, two tanks and the other one had one, and that's because, you know, they didn't want to get confused with both of them. And they, you know, the suit was very, very low tech at the time. It was mm-hmm. basically all rubber, The guy couldn't see out of it.
And they have one foot in the water and one foot out of the water.
Yeah, one in, one out. And the guy underwater had to hold his breath for 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. He had to learn how to hold his breath because they didn't want any air coming out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're like, oh, well, the water comes in through the gills.
Right.
And, you know, that's it.
They wanted to look practical. And apparently in the, they made sequels to this. Apparently in the sequels, they gave up on that. They didn't care if the water came out.
Yeah.
Of the side of the suit. But yeah, in the suit, like you said, it's obviously a practical effect. But for 1954, it looks remarkable. It looks kind of scary and kind of creepy.
Yeah, it does.
And it's not going to, like, make you frightened out of your seat, but it's, you buy it.
Yeah.
You know, and the characters buy it, and they buy into it.
And the score kind of helps with the scenes, you know, setting up the suspense. And I feel like I've heard that score before. The yeah. And then the creature's just slowly walking.
And the cinematography is really well done, too.
Yeah,
it is. It's a really good-looking movie. It, like you said, the score helps build the scene, especially in the underwater scenes. It adds... And these movies didn't have to rely on special effects. They relied on sound effects and special and music effects mm-hmm. to drive the scene and make it more powerful.
And it definitely does, even at this time. And I was surprised that you see the creature so early on. And, you know, because, you know, in the Wolfman, you know, you had to wait a bit longer mm-hmm. To see the Wolfman. And this one, yeah, you see it pretty early. You know, it's the fossil. And then looks like the creature, you know, puts his hand on land. And then Dr. Maia, who the actor that played him had been making films since 1912 at that mm-hmm. time. And, you know, they take off, of course, come back. And, you know, before they come back, we see the monster attack the campers, people yeah. watching the campsite.
And the human cast does a really good job of making you believe in the movie that it's not just a creature feature, it's about these people. And Julie Adams, who plays Kay, she's even talked about over the years how the cast really got along well and everyone really wanted to make it the best movie they could.
Mm-hmm.
And she's done a lot of movies over the years, and she's actually still alive.
Yeah.
And she gets a little upset. Even she's proud of the film, but yet she always, like, when she meets people, they always want to talk about this movie, even though she's done hundreds of other films and a lot of really good movies. But this is the one that she seems to be remembered for.
Yeah.
And she just kind of laughs about it now over the years. She goes, you know, I've made movies with some of the greatest actors of our time, but yet I'm remembered for a guy in a costume chasing me. You know?
And just wanted the woman.
Yeah.
You know, watching this film, it made me, you know, wonder if this was, in a way, kind of like a prequel to Guillermo del Toro's, you know.
Well, you know, del Toro wanted to remake this
yeah.
for Universal, and Universal told him no. And this was back probably 15 years ago when del Toro talked about doing... a remaking the creature for him. Mm-hmm. And many, many directors have tried to remake this movie over the years, and it's never gotten off the ground. As we know, Universal has struggled with having their Monster Universe rebooted. So del Toro went on, he reworked the script and went on to make The Shape of Water, which is a wonderful movie in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, possibly del Toro's best film. I might argue Pan's Labyrinth is a little better.
Yeah.
But Shape of Water is really, really good. And but definitely inspired by it. I mean, Guillermo del Toro is a huge Universal Monsters fan.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously was heavily inspired by this film. You see
easily.
It, where the creature is obsessed with the girl he wants to capture. He wants to take her to his cave and everything and have her for himself.
Yep.
And it makes you almost sympathetic to the creature that you kind of feel bad for him. Like, he really doesn't necessarily kill because he's evil. He kills because he doesn't know any better. He kills because he thinks that's how he has to survive.
Just out of instinct.
Yeah, out of instinct and to survive. He doesn't necessarily kill maliciously in the way that, say, a Freddy Krueger would do or
yeah.
something like that. You know, and that's the difference in a classical horror movie like this compared to the newer stuff. In this movie, there was a lot of reasons for what went on, and the characters were very tragic at times.
Yeah.
Especially in the next movie we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. And this one, you know, you had two different doctors on that boat. One... you know, he wanted just to purely learn and explore. Yeah, and then in the other one, you know, he wanted the fame, and he wanted to take this mm-hmm. thing on, you know, and bring it with him. And
right.
It didn't work out too well for him, no. unfortunately.
And I lost my train of thought. Go
yeah.
Ahead.
Oh, no, yeah. Okay, yeah. Bye. And I liked how they... you know, they use the big ass spear gun.
Oh yeah.
And then they drug the water. They do things like drugging the water, and I was like, what the heck is that?
Right.
I guess it's like chloroform.
Yeah, I think so.
So it
yeah.
kind of reminded me of King Kong a little bit whenever they They tried to use the chloroform to drug him. And then, you know, he's like walking around and I'm just thinking, I'm like, man, wouldn't it be funny to make some kind of weird commentary where this guy's walking around and be like, oh man, whoa. Because like, the way the suit was walking around, he was walking around in the suit. I'm like, man, this guy, he's high, man. This monster, he's high walking around.
And, you know, director Jack Arnold, he directed this film, and he went on to make a lot of science fiction films in the 50s and everything. And his goal for this was to give it a sense of a dread throughout the movie. And but it's funny he went for that, because I didn't feel that necessarily, that there was a sense of dread in this movie, but no. I see what he was going for. And I think my maybe small beef with the movie is if he had shown that they were trapped in the lagoon.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of trying to open it up, maybe it would have given more of a sense of a dread. But they could have gotten out at any time. They were simply trying to open up the lagoon for other explorers.
Yeah.
And people to get through the Amazon. But I see what he was trying to go for there. But, you know, for what he had to work with, you know, he did an amazing job, because this was all shot on, like, one set, basically. Yeah.
And I like the lever-action rifles in there. Really, really cool with the times. Reminded me of kind of like The Mummy. Mm-hmm. Except, you know, I like a little Western and, you know, incorporation into my films, and it was cool having that, but they didn't rely on it too much. You know, they used it when they had to, and the guns weren't enough most of the time. And they had to. He made that makeshift mosquito spray gun out of the drug that they threw into the water, and it was just interesting how they had to battle the creature, and they almost had him. In fact, oh man. Cool little fact, while that guy was the stuntman who was on land, it was so hard to see out of it.
Right.
Julie's character, Julie had her head banged up against one of the columns while he was carrying her in.
Right.
She was supposed to be unconscious, but she ended up being unconscious for real because he knocked her out.
Yeah.
He just couldn't see where he was going, so it was kind of funny, but, you know, just she was all right. You know, she swam a lot for this film, which you can see she's a pretty good swimmer. All of the water is done in a tank. Mm-hmm. That was heated, so it was pretty comfortable, but I guess one day they forgot to heat it, and she wasn't too happy about that whenever she had to swim in cold water.
Right.
But yeah, man, this film was pretty fun to watch for an older film. Jackie watched it with me, and you know, it's changed her, and it kind of opened her up to, you know, how good older films are.
I kind of like the fact, too, that the Universal films they're not overly long, but they give you enough, but they don't drag out, you know? And I thought it neat, too, that Universal, you talked about early on about how good the movie looks. And Universal has been one studio that's done a great job preserving their films over the years compared to some studios.
Mm-hmm.
So these movies still look... They were shot in 4:3 back then because widescreen didn't exist.
Yeah.
But they have the technology to map them to a wider screen. You're not going to quite get 16:9 with these, but you're going to get a bigger palette. And they've done a great job of restoring their films, but yet not so great keeping costumes and things. In fact, the creature costume disappeared through different people over the years. And they're slowly getting pieces back. Like, they don't have the whole thing. They don't even know if it exists. It basically got thrown into a dumpster.
Yeah, pretty much.
When the film was over, and a janitor happened to save parts of the costume. And I guess now, throughout the years, they've been able to collect a mask, a hand, and a few parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the next movie we're going to talk about, The Wolfman, is kind of the same thing. They really keep a lot of archives from their films. So these things have not ended up in museums or places they should be, because Universal did a great job preserving their film, but we're throwing out all the shit we used to make it.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember hearing about how it went missing. But yeah, it was with the Wolfman, that was a different story. That was all makeup. You know, you didn't have a suit. I don't know if we're ready to get into Wolfman yet.
Yeah, we are. Well, before we do, final thoughts on The Creature in Black Lagoon.
I think it still holds up today.
Yeah.
Good dialogue, good action for the time, a good score. And, you know, it's a tribute to what, you know, what good films looked like at that time.
And would you like to see a remake of this, a modern version? I mean, we kind of got it.
We got it.
In some ways.
Would I like to see more of these? Yeah, I would like to see more remakes like Guillermo.
And I've said this before on the show. If Universal is going to bring back these characters, which are classic, they need to go look at these films and see what makes them work. Make them about characters. Make them about story. Don't make them about gore or how much action we can put in
there. Yeah.
Or Tom Cruise running. And I'm not faulting Tom for how The Mummy turned out. That was just bad direction, bad editing.
Yeah.
But look at what made these great in the first place, Universal, if you're going to bring these back. Because there's the characters are there, the potential's there, and I think people want to see them. But you got to do it the right way. And Del Toro showed you how to do it with your own character in a different version of the film, mm-hmm. but for a different studio. So it's there. Just make it happen. So I still like the movie a lot, too. This is I like the Wolfman. Creature's probably a close second favorite as far as Universal Classics. And I mean, they're all great. You know, Frankenstein's great. Dracula's great, which eventually, you know, we'll probably talk about those maybe next year.
Probably.
Frankenstein and Dracula. The Phantom of the Opera, The Invisible
Man. Oh, yeah.
So many great characters put out by Universal Pictures. But a really good movie. So let's talk about The Wolfman, which was a little bit older movie.
Yeah.
1941, so we're going back 13 years. And that just shows you this, how long, because I think Dracula was, what, 34 or something?
Yeah.
So how many years Universal was putting out these great, great movies. And
and Dracula is actually in this film.
Yeah, Bela Lugosi. Yeah, Bela Lugosi was going to play the Wolfman.
Yeah, he was.
I guess scheduling conflicts kept him out of it, and he was kind of bitter about
it. Yeah, he didn't like that.
He wasn't real nice to Lon Chaney Jr., because he wasn't happy that he took the role from him. And, of course, because he felt that Lon Chaney Jr. got the role because his dad had done a lot of movies for Universal. His dad played the Phantom of the Opera.
Mm-hmm.
So Bela Lugosi felt like, you know, what the heck? But Bela got paid eventually. Universal ended up giving him some sequels and a big contract. And he ended up making his money. But he wasn't real happy to be in taken down and basically a cameo in this film.
Yeah, pretty much a cameo, but a well-acted cameo. Yeah. I mean, what little you get of him in this film will pretty much tell you, you know, how you know, strong his acting is and his drama, his ability to portray his drama and you know, just set the tone of the scene and you know, get you hyped up and make you feel a little bit of terror,
right?
You know, and hair raising tone. I don't know. It's hard to tell. Yeah.
And the Wolfman is a different. The Creature from the Black Lagoon is more of a adventure creature movie.
Yeah.
This is more of a tragic horror film.
Yeah.
Because Lon Chaney Jr. plays Larry Talbot.
Larry Talbot.
And he comes back from being overseas, I guess, doing business, and he's an aristocrat. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of money. And one thing I first noticed when I first watched The Wolfman years ago, and then I've rewatched it many times, is like, they don't make a big deal about him being rich. You know, nowadays, you know, someone's rich, you make a big deal about it. He's just a regular guy who happens to come into money
mm-hmm.
and work for his dad. And so I think, therefore, because you relate to him, you feel for him
in some
ways.
But he's also a little bit of a creep.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, if you think about it, he's fixing the refractor on his lens, and he sees this girl through her window. So he decides to go to the pawn shop, and he's like, "Yeah, I want these earrings with little, you know, half moons on them." She's like, "Well, we don't have any." "Well, you have some on your dresser." He's like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, I saw you." And she's like, "Oh, you know," later on, she's like, "I should learn to keep my blinds closed." And he's like, "How about not?" And I'm like, "What?" I'm like, and then he keeps asking her and pressing her out to go on a date. And then, you know, she finally agrees. And it ends up being with two women. He goes on a date with two women. But I'm like, dude, this guy, he's like staring at her through the window, won't leave her alone. Tells her to leave her blinds open so he could basically, you know, look at her whenever she's in less clothing, you know, possibly. And it reminds me of a friend that I know that isn't, you know, behind a microphone next to us today. I'm like, dude, this guy, if Frank came into money, this could be Frank.
That's hilarious. But yeah, no, you're right. They do that at first. You kind of get the sense of being kind of weird. But then he kind of, as things happen throughout the movie, you kind of do sympathize.
Then you feel bad for him, yeah.
And in this town, there's a legend about a wolf that bites people and they become a wolf man and all that. And most people don't believe it. Some of the older townsfolk kind of do, but it's kind of a hidden secret. No one really wants to talk about it. So when he takes these women out on this date, of course, they're attacked by a wolf and he gets bit and everything and he kills the wolf. And then the next morning, it turns out they're telling me he killed a man.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't believe it. He knows I killed a wolf and he thought he got bit, but his wound is healed. And that's when it all changes from that point on.
And they're like, "Oh, well, maybe he's just tired. He's just distraught." And he's like, "It was a wolf. I fought a wolf." And then At first, they thought this was gonna, they were gonna make this thing, this psychological twist to where he just thought he was.
They were
the
never
wolf
gonna
man.
Show the Wolfman.
They were
yeah.
never gonna see it. They're gonna make it to where he thinks it's all in his mind, and that's where you see the references back to mm-hmm. you know, maybe it's in your head, maybe you imagined it. Only in one man's mind could this, you know, happen, and so forth. You know, you have the doctor of psychology that talks to him a lot, and trying to figure out if he's just crazy, really. And they follow him around town, and you know he runs into the girl that he was, you know, hitting on in the pawn shop. And you know, and her boyfriend, they're at a fair, and he's like, "Oh, want to try your luck at this game?" And they're like, "Well, this man, he can definitely handle a gun."
And all the police are watching him. Yeah,
yeah, police are just checking him out. And of course, the wolf target pops up, and he's like,
he freaks out,
and then to leave.
And of course, you have the strange gypsy woman who keeps watching him and telling him strange things. He just thinks she's crazy.
Yeah, gypsies freak me out.
But you know, from there, though, people know the story. He becomes a wolfman, and the town hunts him because they want to find out what's going on. And we won't get to the ending yet because the ending is quite tragic in a lot of ways. But this movie introduced a lot of wolf lores to people that, you know, back in 1941, unless they read this stuff, you know, which if you read that kind of stuff, you were considered kind of creepy or weird. Evil back then, you know. It was different times, but this introduces the ideas of silver bullets to kill a wolf and stuff like that, which was again only in books if you read that kind of stuff. You know, it's funny, the idea of a full moon turning wolf is never shown in this movie. They do use it in the sequels where you see the moon, but you never mm-hmm. see a moon in this.
Which we should note, in the sequels he's one of the few actors that actually keeps playing his same mm-hmm. character over and over and over again. In fact, he's changed back into a human, and then he becomes a werewolf again, and you know, after his team up with Frankenstein. So it's a really cool series.
But
there's a lot of things that you just assume because, you know, we've heard the lore before, you know, full moon, you change, but like you said, we never really get confirmation that it's a full moon whenever he does change.
Right. They just say that I think there's something in the poem where they change every so often or something. They mention that.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's talk about the makeup effects in this. For 1941, they're really good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, he convincingly, Lon Chaney, convincingly looks different when he changes. And mm-hmm. they use stop motion animation style where they show his legs and they have a little bit of hair, a little bit more hair, and eventually his face, and he's changed. And really, really well done, though, for the time. That's what they had to do.
Yeah. They had to show just his legs at first because just his legs took 2 hours to do that whole stop motion you know, scene. And he complained that he wasn't able to take bathroom breaks due to the makeup and how long it took. But then, you know, Universal was like, oh, no, you know, he's just being dramatic. He had 2 hour breaks, you know, here and there whenever he wanted them. So I don't know. But I, you know, it looked like he had a little bit of an uncomfortable time having all that stuff put on.
And they do shoot a lot of the Wolfman scenes in the dark, and that's probably so that you couldn't quite see any imperfections in the makeup, but they're still very convincing.
Yeah, and if you look at some of the scenes, whenever he's beating the first wolf, it's behind a tree.
Mm-hmm.
So they have admitted that, you know, they did try and mask some stuff to try and hide, you know, some of the poor effects. You know, it wasn't perfect, but with, you know, all that they threw in there to kind of, you know, make up for, you know, those imperfections, it does make for a good film.
Again, a great use of music in this.
Oh, yeah.
And a great use of soundstage. That was one of the most expensive soundstages they ever built for Universal, which stayed on the lot for like 20 years for other movies there. And they used the fog in there to make the scenes look, you know, creepier and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even a scene, you know, it's funny, Universal has a history of girls passing out. The one actress, I don't have her name in front of me, she actually does pass out from something in the fog was making her feel sick.
Oh, wow.
And she laid there for like a few hours before they realized it. She had passed out. And one of the maintenance guys found her, and she was okay. So Universal had a problem keeping their women awake in these movies. And but let's talk about the ending of this movie. Lon Chaney Jr., of course, his father is one of the few people that really do want to believe his son, that it's not in his mind, and that his, but yet he also thinks that maybe it is in his mind. He kind of goes back and forth with his son a little bit, you know. But towards the end of the movie, though, when he tells him to stay here, he ties him up, we're going to go hunt this wolf.
Yeah.
Of course, it doesn't hold him. He gets loose and everything. And essentially, his dad has a run-in with the wolf man, which he doesn't know is his son, and he kills him. Basically, it alludes to that. So his dad's looking at his son turn back in from a wolf back into a man in horror that it was his own son. And of course, even though he came back for the sequels, but you know,
yeah.
But so this has a much more tragic ending. And a lot of the Universal films were very much like that.
Yeah.
Even at the end of The Creature from the Black Lagoon, again, he came back from sequels, but it's alluded to that the creature dies.
And it just really just ends abruptly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it happens and then boom, the end. And you're like, what?
Yeah, this one is Wolfman, especially.
Yeah. Kind of
quickly, you know.
And I'm like, that's just such a cliffhanger to really, you know, drop on somebody. And there's no downtime afterwards to kind of, you know, settle yourself and
after the tragedy of it.
Yeah.
But overall, this movie holds up really well too. There's been a few different versions of the Wolfman story over the years. This movie has been kind of remade in different versions. You had Jack Nicholson's Wolf. You had Benicio del Toro, the Wolfman, a few years ago.
Teen Wolf.
But the wolf, the idea of a Wolfman in creature lore has been around for many years, and I think, again, if Universal's going to do this, they need to look back at what makes it work, make it a tragic story about a tragic character, and the reason why you want to care about this guy. Maybe not make him such a creep when you redo it, you know?
Yeah, not such a creep that can't take no for an answer and wants to spy on girls across the way.
But I did find the difference in this and the creatures. Not that the creature isn't well acted, but this is like really well acted.
Yeah,
like the Wolfman, you can tell that Lon Chaney Jr. and Bela Lugosi and these people are really, really excellent actors in this movie.
Yeah.
And they make you believe in the story and believe in the legend of the Wolfman.
Yeah, they do a really good job. And that's one thing that really surprised me is that the performance is really good. The picture's great. And same thing, just like Creature of the Black Lagoon, it's character development, story, dialogue, you know, and that's what made up the film.
See, now you need to seek out the other Universal classics. Yeah, hopefully I turned you on to a new genre.
Yeah, now I'm going to have to see what else Prime has. I think Prime probably at least has the main ones that inspired Monster Squad.
Right.
I can probably get those and watch those and maybe have that for another download this.
Yeah, but overall, a couple of really good movies. And, you know, and it got me thinking, you know, you and me are big Star Wars guys. But, you know, there's a whole fandom out there for this, too. People are really into their monster movies and stuff like that. And like, the hardcore monster guys separate this from, like, slasher films. You know, they don't consider it in the same genre of horror. Like, there's a huge fandom for this. And there's been tons of collectibles over the years. Action figures, glasses.
Funko Pops.
Universal Monsters has a huge following. And it's a big deal. And I hope maybe one day Universal is able to do some modern versions of these characters.
Yeah, that would be neat and really do it justice. I mean, at this point, I think the best remake that's been done, you know, of The Mummy is the Brandon Fraser one, the first one.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it wasn't a great film. It had some good parts. But, you know, now I'm like, you know, maybe they should just count that as canon and build off of it.
And a lot of these characters have had multiple movies put out about him. Like, Hammer Pictures did a lot of Dracula, Wolfman, and Mummy pictures of their own, which are completely separate than Universal, because a lot of this stuff was, like I said, public domain. Anyone could make pictures about him.
Yeah.
You know, no one actually owned the rights to something called the Wolfman. It was an open idea. And Universal took it, though, and they're the most famous. Hammer Horror has their own cult following of their films they've done, but this was the big one. And hopefully they continue to, I think they're almost 100 years old. I think people continue to watch these movies for a long time to come.
Yeah.
You know. So final thoughts on The Creature from Black Lagoon or The Wolfman?
No, both really good, very surprising. I think, you know, if you don't check out these films, then you're really undervaluing them. They're way better than you may think.
Yeah, and you know, if you enjoy October, enjoy Halloween, I think honestly you should watch these if you're going to call yourself a fan of anything horror.
Yeah.
That you have to start where it all started back, you know, 70, 80 years ago with these classic movies, which are really well done.
And they
don't take up a lot of your time. You can sit down in the afternoon and watch two of them.
Yeah.
And the time it takes to watch one Star Wars movie.
You really could. I mean, it's like an hour tops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good movies.
Good movies.
So before we talk about our next movie we're going to do on Halloween horrors, we've got a few news briefs to talk about. We talked about the big news earlier with Star Wars The Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian, not the Mandarin, but mostly, Mandalorian.
Mostly trailers to talk about. Did you watch the extended trailer for Aquaman, the 5-minute trailer?
I did.
Man, does that shit look cool?
It looks really good, man.
Yeah, it does. The only thing that bugged me is Amber Heard's really red wig.
Yeah.
It's kind of like almost too red.
Too red.
But it looks better in the water scenes. When she's standing outside the water, I'm like, wow, it's really red.
Yeah.
You know? And it looks like they're very much going for what worked with, in Wonder Woman, a sense of adventure, a sense, some humor in it.
Yeah.
Like, I really thought the scene where he goes, where they need water to make the thing work, and he goes, why did I just pee on it? I thought that was kind of funny. You know? But, man, this it looks like DC is... going to get another one right, hopefully. Let's hope it all comes together, at least from the trailers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think this kind of, it reminds me of you know, Captain America, the first Avenger. I think Wonder Woman kind of did. Like, you know, it's an adventure.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, whenever you keep it focused around an adventure, this could be DC's formula. This could be the thing that they need to focus on. And just really make the films, fun and make it your own.
Make a few really good individual films. They'll worry about getting the group together in a Justice League movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's the right way to do it. And this comes out a couple of months from now, and I'm really hoping it's good. It looks really good. I like Jason Momoa in the role.
Yeah.
You know, it should be exciting. And so we'll see. Okay. And then the next trailer, Netflix, Daredevil Season 3. This comes out in about a week, or about 10 days.
Yes, you know, the devil.
Did you watch the new trailer with Bullseye?
I did. It looks pretty badass.
Finally Bullseye after 3 seasons.
A good Bullseye.
It looks really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say other than I can't wait for the 19th. I really want to watch this. You know, last we left Matt Murdock at the end of The Defenders, he was hurt. His mother found him, and we'll see where he goes from there to reclaim his city again after the events of The Defenders.
Are we going to get, is it announced we're going to get Punisher?
They're filming season 2 right now.
That's right.
For Punisher. So yeah, okay. It's early next year it should be out. So it seems like they're knocking these things out fast.
I mean, yeah, yeah.
Luke Cage season 2, Iron Fist season 2, Jessica Jones, now Daredevil, seems like they're knocking them out quick.
I meant to watch a few episodes of Iron Fist season 2. I'm hoping that it's a lot better than Iron Fist season 1. I really liked him in The Defenders. I thought he had a really good role in Defenders. But you know, let's see how he is on his own, not playing off of the other characters.
Well, honestly, I think I haven't watched all of Iron Fist, but I really would like. I just want to see Heroes for Hire.
Yeah,
come on. At this point, let's do a Luke Cage Iron Fist show.
That would be cool.
Let's do Heroes for Hire. That'd be cool. We're gonna stay in Marvel for a minute. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse had a new trailer out, and man. You know, this looks like a lot of fun. It's animated, of course. It's kind of nice maybe to go into the theater and see a movie that's not tied into a universe. Just go watch a Spider-Man film, walk out of it, and say, that was fun.
Yeah, I really like how they're depicting Spider-Man in this one. He's, you know, looked like he's been doing his job for a while. And he's like, oh, you know, the first trailer that came out, you have any money? You have any money to pay for this? And he's like, okay, well, maybe I'm not the best role model. But yeah, Miles. This is Miles Morales, right? Yeah. So I think this is based off of Miles Morales, and you know, we'll see. You know, we'll see how this film plays out. It looks really fun.
Yeah.
You've got Spider Gwen in there, and
Spider-Man Noir. Several of the Spider-Man characters. It looks like in it.
And it kind of reminds me of. I don't know if you ever watched the. Have you ever watched the Amazing Spider-Man? Not the Amazing Spider-Man, but I think it was the Amazing Spider-Man, the 1995 TV series that came out, and there was a universe that he went into where all the spiders were all in one, and it kind of reminds me of that, except you know, of course, the graphics look way better, and you know, the animation, you know, is just really cool.
And I've watched some of that Spider-Man Unlimited with my son, and they've done some of the Spider-Verse stuff in that too. So it's like a combination. I guess it is based on a comic series. So we'll see where we're... I hope it's successful because maybe they'll make more of these. It's from Sony Animation. And it looks like a lot of fun. So we'll see what happens with it. You know, as we get ready for that. That comes out Christmas time, too.
Yeah.
So we have
Aquaman
and Spider-Man at Christmas.
That's not bad. So that's I'll take it.
Good. Lastly, a bit of news. We haven't got any footage yet, but they announced that Hellboy got pushed back to April. Apparently, they showed footage this past week at New York Comic Con, and people said it was really good. Everyone's curious how David Harbour is going to work in the role. I don't know what else to say about it other than I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean the poster looks really good.
Really cool poster.
He looks the part. And I'm optimistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, that's it. That's all I got for news, unless you have any news that we're not, you know, I'm not thinking of.
I have no, the actor that played Herschel Walker died.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Scott Wilson.
Scott Wilson.
Yeah. He was 76. He had leukemia. And, The Walking Dead's been going on for several seasons now, but he brought a lot of, humanity.
Yeah.
The Walking Dead.
Yeah, humanity.
His character of Herschel. And, you know, he's been a great character actor. There's been a lot of movies over the years. Mark Hamill tweeted out about when he first met Scott Wilson, how he made him feel like he knew him for years. Well-respected in his community, and he'll be missed. And apparently he was going to come back on The Walking Dead season, obviously probably in flashbacks.
Yeah.
But I guess, I don't know if he had filmed his parts already or not, so we'll see if he's able. AMC hasn't said or not.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing he hadn't. I think they would have released a statement by now.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I would imagine season 9 is still kind of filming. I don't think they're done yet.
No, I don't think so.
But thank you for the acting that you have given us.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
You know, so let's talk about our next film. As the month of Halloween horrors continues, and we're going to go back to 1984 and do a classic. We're going to do A Nightmare on Elm Street.
The kids of Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them.
There's something out there, isn't there?
You can just see cuts happen.
What did that, Lieutenant?
I don't know.
Tina!
Is the coroner got to say?
He's in the jaw and puking since he saw it.
You're gonna kill me for sure.
Did you do it?
There was somebody else there.
He was locked in a room with a girl who went in alive and came out in a rubber bag.
No one knows where it came from or who it will visit next.
Nancy?
There's something wrong with you. You're imagining things.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Do you believe in the boogeyman?
No.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
No!
She's the only one who can stop it. If she fails...
I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy.
No one will survive.
Help me, please!
Wes Craven, director of The Hills Have Eyes and Last House on the Left, a new masterpiece in fantasy terror, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
Man, you know, Freddy, you can't have Halloween without Freddy Krueger.
No, you can't.
Classic slasher. We talked about different slashers we wanted to do, and you were real stuck on wanting to do Pinhead, and I thought about it, but, you know, I was like, well, man, let's really do a really classic. And the easy choice would be Halloween because the movie's coming out in theaters.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's all over the place lately. Let's do something that's not all over the place.
Yeah, I think there was definitely four films that we were thinking of. Definitely Nightmare on Elm Street. You know, we thought about... I don't think we even brought up Halloween, like you said, because that was just too easy.
Yeah.
We thought about Friday the 13th. You know, of course, and I brought up, you know, Leatherface, you know, Texas Chainsaw 1974, and of course, Pinhead, because, for those who don't know, I proposed to my wife whenever we were watching Hellraiser because I didn't want to wait.
And, that's still so weird.
Yeah, it was very weird. And, you know, if I am to quote, Stephen King, I have seen the future of horror and his name is Charles Burns. No, sorry.
Clive Barker.
Just fucked that. Charles, why did I say Charles Burns? Charles Burns wrote Charles Burns wrote and did the artistry work for Black Hole, which is a very trippy thriller Disney graphic movie. Novel. Yeah, so
oh wait, no, that was yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, okay.
Good job, Matt. You just really ruined that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so Nightmare on Elm Street, man, that's a good one, man.
It really is.
It is a classic, and people might argue they have a favorite Nightmare on Elm Street movie. Like, some people like the Dream Warriors.
Yeah, Dream Warriors.
Like, but you got to start with the original that started all, directed by the legendary Wes Craven and starring the legendary Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger, the mass
Robert Englund,
child murderer.
Yeah. And then, man, the guy who played the sheriff was also in Enter the Dragon, which we did Enter the Dragon, I believe, as our second episode in this new format. I forget his name. It's like
We'll have to look it up for the next.
Yeah, I'll have to save it.
But I mean, I haven't watched this in a long time, so I'm looking forward to watching it and seeing how it. I'm sure it still holds up well today. Yeah. It's a classic. So next week on Halloween Horrors on the Rebel Radio Podcast, we're going to talk Nightmare on Elm Street. So we hope you tune in for that.
Yes, please. You know?
And other than that, that is all we've got this week, I think. I can't think of anything else. I got a call from Arnold. He said Comics for Arnold is coming.
That's right.
So, yeah, he let me know. He said it's coming. He's been busy filming Terminator 10 or whatever number.
Yeah, Terminator. So he's like, he apologized.
And, you know, and I said, it's okay, Arnold. Please don't hurt me. But so it's coming. So go to our YouTube channel for that. You can find everything at therebelradiopodcast.com. Links to our YouTube, our Facebook, our Twitter, all that stuff. Yeah, our Instagram. And buy a t-shirt while you're there.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, please.
And listen to us on WBLZmedia.com on Ironic Radio every Wednesday at 2 to 4. And we're on all apps, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher. I didn't even know we're on Podcast Addict.
Yes, Podcast Addict.
I guess Podcast Addict is owned by Google Play. So because we're on Google Play, we're on Podcast Addict.
Yes.
So not hard to find a way to listen to the Rebel Radio Podcast. And I didn't have any shout-outs this week other than I'll give a shout-out to our buds at the Thorskin Podcast. They were able to get, I don't know the guy's name, but he was on the Edumacation Podcast with Kevin Smith. Somehow they got him on their show this week, so that should be cool. It just came out today, so go give the guys at Thorskin a listen and listen to that new episode from Alex and Tom Bruno. Yeah, I don't know. Tom might still be mad at me because I said I hated Tropic Thunder.
That's true.
Yeah, that movie sucks. I'm sorry.
It was very weird.
But
I have very mixed reviews myself watching that film. Like, the first time I watched it, I'm like, this is stupid. And then the second time I watched it, I think the people around me thought it was funny. And all of a sudden, like, I was like, okay, well, maybe some of this is funny, but some. Like, I kind of like Tom Cruise's character and of course, Robert Downey Jr.'s character, but I don't think I like the other ones.
And if Frank was here, he always thinks I don't like comedy. It's not that I don't like comedy. I don't like satire.
Yeah.
I don't find satire funny. I don't really get it. You know, like, maybe certain kind of satire, like Robot Chicken.
Yeah, Robot Chicken.
That's more lower level.
Yeah.
My brain, I guess, doesn't comprehend satire in film, so I think Tropic Thunder was stupid. That's just me.
What's your favorite Robot Chicken bit?
I don't know. I like a lot of the Star Wars stuff. Is pretty funny.
The Star Wars, that's got to be the best. One of the things that I liked, it was a little bit that they did called Jerks with Time Machines. And the first one they did, they found J.K. Rowling, and she's like digging through a dumpster, and she's like, they're like, oh, J.K. Rowling. She's like, oh, hi, I had an idea for a book. It's and they interrupt her, and he's like, you will write a book about Rocky, the retarded raccoon. He shoots fire out of his bunghole. And she's like, yes, that's exactly what I'll write. And then they go back into their own time, and like, jerks with time machines. And I'm like, dude, that's horrible. But I would like to see a book about a raccoon that shoots fire out of his ass. It'd be great.
Of course you would.
Yes.
And someone probably is going to do that now because they heard Matt say.
Yes.
But on that note, way to end it than raccoons blowing fire out their ass. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Thank you, as always, for listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. And we'll be back next week with Halloween Horrors continues in the month of October. Until then, just
go there and do it.
Hey, Headbangers, this is Rudy Sarzo, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. And trust me, I'm a Jedi.
Hey, you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. My name is Sean Patrick Flannery, and I hope you dig the podcast.